meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. This story from the Gospel, this reads like a story about hard feelings, hard hearts, community broken. All of this rancor, all this division, all over hand washing. Who would want to join a community like this? Who would want to follow a leader like Jesus, so wrapped up in this argument over defilement? It seems beneath him somehow. To start to understand this story, I think it helps to ask, what does it mean? What does it mean to say that a person is defiled? It's an ugly word in any language. Here, defilement, it does not mean moral failure, even deep moral failure. It doesn't mean anything like that. Defilement, instead, means something very, very specific. It has to do with the book of Leviticus. This word, defilement, it comes straight out of the book of Leviticus. And at the heart of the logic of the book of Leviticus is the idea that what is inside the community is holy, and it is healthy, and it is wholesome. And what is outside the community, well, it is unhealthy, unwholesome, unholy. Inside the community, there is God. Outside the community, there is not God. So it's important to keep these things separate, to keep them far away from each other, so that if a person from inside of the community goes out and has contact with foreign people or with impure food or in any way gets mixed up with what is happening out there, they're considered contaminated with an invisible kind of defilement, something you can't see or touch, but if you come in contact with another person from inside the community while you're contaminated, then the contamination spreads from person to person and person, infecting others. And so, in order to protect the community, if someone was contaminated, they would be quarantined temporarily. They had to undergo a time of cleansing where they would wash themselves carefully and stay away from other people. Now, how intensively they needed to wash and how long they needed to be quarantined, well, that depended. Depended on how seriously they had been contaminated. This defilement, this contamination, does not have to do with moral failure. It's nothing like that. Instead, it has to do with trying to keep what is inside the community inside the community, and to keep what is outside the community outside the community. That's what's at stake here. What is in and what is out? Who is in and who is out? Enter the Pharisees. The Pharisees were, either way, a kind of a popular religious reform movement. Contemporary to the time of Jesus, they were reformers. And they were instituting some reforms, trying to make the Leviticus defilement codes a bit more welcoming, a bit more gracious, a bit easier to abide by for everyone. They believed that, among other reforms, it should be the case that before a group of people sat down to a meal to eat together, everybody, whether they had come into contact with anything contaminated or not, everybody should, all of them, publicly wash their hands in front of everyone. Now, this was in keeping, I suppose, with the law of Leviticus, but if a person had not been contaminated, why should they have to wash their hands? Well, sits down for a meal, meant to be an opportunity for community, for people to grow closer to one another. If a whole group of people sits down to a meal, hands dry as a bone, and one among them gets up to wash their hands, it would sort of make you wonder, what had they been up to all day? What had they been doing such that now they have to go wash their hands? What's wrong with them? By having everyone, whether they had stayed inside the community all day or been out in the world, by having everyone wash their hands all together, it turned what had been an opportunity for singling people out, it turned that into an opportunity for everyone to be on the same footing, to draw people together in a community practice that made sure that everyone was on the same page. And all of this was accomplished while staying inside the letter of the law of the book of Leviticus, inside the community. This was a reform, what the Pharisees were doing. And Jesus, too, he had a reputation for being a reformer. And I think that's probably why the Pharisees came to see Jesus, all the way from Jerusalem to Galilee, no small journey, by the way. They travel across the whole country to go and see Jesus, to meet him, to find out if here was a kindred spirit of reform, a person perhaps with whom they might join forces even. But when they meet Jesus and they sit down to share a meal with him, they notice that there is no community hand washing. People simply start eating, and when the Pharisees get up to wash their hands, they stick out like sore thumbs. It's obvious they don't belong, and so not having been welcomed into that particular meal, they ask Jesus, why? Why do your followers not keep to the tradition? Why don't they wash their hands? It's a fair question, especially for people just made to feel alone. It's fair. But Jesus, in front of everybody, lights them up. He calls them a bunch of hypocrites. He says that the prophet Isaiah had been specifically warning the world about how bad they were going to be. And if that weren't enough, he finishes off with a laundry list of how they should be worried about the murder and the theft and the adultery going on in their own midst, and leave off about the hand washing tips. Now, if they had not already felt unwelcome, well, hard feelings, hard hearts, community broken, all this rancor, all this division, all over hand washing. It's hard to understand what Jesus is doing here. Well, to understand this whole drama, it hinges and turns around one little word. One little word. It helps make sense of what Jesus does and what he means to teach, how he means for us to live. One little word. Some. Our passage, it says that some of Jesus' disciples didn't wash their hands before the meal, meaning that some did. Some of Jesus' followers held to the holiness codes of the book of Leviticus, and some did not. Some of Jesus' followers were pillars of the community, and some of Jesus' followers were so far outside the bonds of the community, outside of the holiness codes that governed it, that no amount of hand washing was ever going to make anybody think that they were ritually clean. People whose bodies didn't work the same way as others. People whose bodies didn't look the same way as others. People who didn't make their living in polite ways, but did what they had to do to survive. People whose families didn't look the same way. people who could not pass for respectable with just a splash of water. People who would stick out like sore thumbs no matter what they did. Those are the people Jesus was worried about making feel welcome. There's nothing wrong with wanting to help already respectable people feel at home. That's fine. But you have to go deeper than that in order to be a follower of Jesus. It has to be deeper than the surface, deeper than the skin, deep all the way down to the heart, to how we view other people. Now, this is why, by the way, Jesus chooses to call out certain kinds of behavior, calling them the things that really defile, them the things that really separate from community. Murder and theft and adultery and greed and lying and tearing down people's reputations. Jesus says, those are the things you really have to worry about if you care about keeping the community together. Those are the things you really have to worry about if you care about defilement. Now, this is not just a generic laundry list of sins, by the way. It's not even a laundry list of the most serious sins, because absent from this are some big ones, like not working on the Sabbath, not taking God's name in vain, not worshiping other gods. Those things are simply absent from this list. This is not a general list of sins. These are things that have a logic to them. Jesus says murder, theft, greed, adultery, tearing down people's reputations. These are sins that flow from believing that I am worth more than other people. That one kind of rules should apply to me and to others. A different set of rules. To murder another person, I have to believe that my life is valuable and theirs not so much. To steal from another person, I have to believe that what's mine is mine and what's yours not so much. To live a life defined by greed, I have to decide that I should have comfort, but you not so much. Jesus picks out and highlights sins and ways of living life that flow from believing that I am more important than other people. These sins, they would defile me. They would defile me. That is, they would separate me from community. Because if that is the way I view other people, that I matter and they don't, there's no way I can be in community with them. It's impossible. If I view people in the way that I matter more than them, I have already separated myself from the community. Whether it's because I think I'm better than someone because of where I live, or because I look a certain way, or because my clothes are clean, or because I woke up in my own bed rather than on the street, to believe that I am better than someone else, that is what will really defile me, what will really separate me from community. The Pharisees, they were on the right track. They were. But they did not go far enough, not nearly far enough. For there is none who is defiled except the one who looks down on others. There is none who is alone except the one who claims to need no help along the way. There is none who is lost except the one who believes they have already arrived. Jesus called them. Jesus calls us today to go more deeply in welcoming the outsider. To go deeply into an inner reformation of heart. To an inner reformation of heart to build a community that truly welcomes all comers, requiring nothing of them other this was hard. This was hard to do in the time of Jesus, and it is hard to do today. It is an easy thing to do to say that all are welcome. It is a hard thing to do.